I'm Gab, he's Jules. Blue skies over West London. Jules, we're big NBA fans. We'll be doing our own draft. You'll remember, we did this last year.
Yep.
Drafting players born in 2001. We're going to pretend it's a bit of fun.
Yep.
Let's deal with it. But before we get into that, because we have a ton to go through because the transfer market's in full swing, I feel like we need to talk a little bit more organically about this summer, the summer of Saudi, as we've had it so far.
Yeah.
It began with Cristiano Ronaldo going over to the Saudi League for an enormous deal. And people talked about, oh, he's going to raise the level of the Saudi Pro League, blah, blah, blah. And then since people like, ah, okay, whatever, right? Just, you know, Cristiano making a lot of money because he's one of the GOATs.
Yeah.
But then since then, some serious money's already been thrown about, around, confirmed. We have, obviously, Karim Benzema.
Yeah.
We have N'Golo Kante. Lots of rumors and reports that Edouard Mendy's close, Ziyech is close, and so on. I want to start with one basic question, because to me, this smells like China a few years ago.
Yeah, it sounds a bit like that.
Is that how you see it?
I don't think so. I think, you know, China was, like, the Saudi League was a league with a lot of fans coming to see. I mean, you can argue about the level, what kind of level, what the equivalent would be in Europe, what kind of league, but it was a popular league with a lot of fans in stadiums. It was a league that, or I thought, had the potential because of the money behind it to do that kind of stuff. China, I remember very quickly, they changed the rules a bit. You were then only allowed three foreign players. They wanted to develop more the Chinese players, et cetera, et cetera. I think the objective here is very different, right?
But the same thing is you have got government or sovereign wealth funds who are directly involved, funds that are controlled by the government, directly involved trying to grow it. For me, the biggest difference why, and I speak of, you know, economists talk about people called irrational actors, right? People who aren't, you know, economics, rational. I get a return on my investment, usually in terms of money, well, sometimes it's in terms of influence or whatever. This to me seems irrational because it's irrational in the sense you can't spend that kind of money and think that you're going, your league's going to grow to the point that you're going to get a return. For the simple reason that, as you said, this isn't like, Saudi Arabia is 40 million people. China has more than a billion.
Yeah.
They're already football fans. You're not going to go and convert them.
Yeah.
Maybe like the way they tried to do with MLS. They said, oh, let's convert baseball fans into football fans. No, that's not, it's not going to happen, right? There's only so much it can grow in terms of commercially to challenge the Premier League and the big European leagues commercially in terms of an actual business that, you know, is more or less sustainable. And I think that is what's making a lot of people uneasy about this and is what getting a lot of people, including myself, maybe wrongly, to assume this is going to last a little while and then it's going to fizzle out.
Maybe, although you could think that if the big stars keep coming, then the TV rights, even in Europe, you would want to watch a game with Cristiano against Benzema and Modric against Ziyech or Kante. Do you see what I mean? So maybe then the TV rights would go up. Maybe there would be more sponsors coming and not just Saudi brands and Saudi big companies. Maybe sponsors from you know, around the world would want to be associated. Yeah. I don't know. And maybe it's just a way for them to, you know, to get a better image and more influence around the world, to try to, for people to not think about the bad things about Saudi, but think about how good the football is over there. I don't know. It might be a bit of all of that.
Yeah, no. And that brings the other thing, you know, is this an image play? Are they trying, or is it an influence play? Personally, I don't really think it's an image play because, frankly, the more you're kind of in the spotlight, and we saw this with Qatar, right?
Yeah.
The more people are going to raise issues about human rights abuses, totalitarian governments, and whatever else. So if you want to be a really bad dude, the best thing to do is just control your country and not have an international profile, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Everybody knows who Jamal Khashoggi is, in part, you know, football fans know who he is, in part because of the Newcastle takeover, whatever, right? So I think there's going to be more questions asked there. In terms of influence, again, you're the world's largest oil producer. You're one of the biggest importers in the world. You're a major regional military power. I think you're the third biggest weapons importer in the world. You have, like, it's not a problem for MBS to pick up the phone and call Putin or Biden and have them get on the phone with him, right?
Yeah, no.
So I don't know. I
could
think,
you, could you explain the latest controversy in a way is that the Saudis who own Newcastle and 90% of the shares might also be involved in the Chelsea takeover via Clearlake, and I think people are getting bugged up about that.
So one of the things is the Public Investment Fund of Saudi Arabia, who own the majority of Newcastle, they are investors in Clearlake, which is this massive fund which has 60% roughly of the Chelsea shares. So the thinking is, is this a way for Saudi to kind of help Chelsea out by taking these players, Ziyech, Mendy, whatever, paying transfer fees? Chelsea obviously in a difficult financial position.
Yeah.
I don't think that's the case for the simple reason that Clearlake is audited. Nobody at Clearlake has more than 5% of the shares.
Yeah.
So PIF simply can't influence Clearlake to that degree.
Yeah.
Would they want to do Bowley a favor for other reasons? Maybe, but again, you got to get a return somehow, right? Mm. You are running a business, right?
And you want Newcastle to win more than Chelsea, right? If you're
PIF. I would assume your brand is Newcastle.
Exactly, yeah.
Not Chelsea. Certainly more so. So anyway, it's complicated. We will be monitoring this story all summer long. All right, Jules, we're going to do something which has become a tradition on the Gab and Jules Show, in the sense that it's the second year that we do this. Tonight is the NBA draft, and so therefore we're going to do our own football draft, sort of an NBA draft equivalent. The rules are we can only pick players. We'll pick a top 10 initially of players born in 2001.
Okay.
I know players of all ages enter the NBA draft or whatever.
But we stick this to 01, different. Yeah?
We stick it to 01, okay, the way it was in the olden days of the NBA.
Exactly.
Only seniors were eligible. I think that was, what, pre-Magic Johnson. So a long, long time ago. We need to establish, though, who picks first. And we're going to go, you go first, and then the next guy gets two pick, and then the next guy gets two picks to make it fair, right?
Yeah, yeah, fair enough.
All right, we're going to do rock, paper, scissors for this.
Yeah.
You ready?
Go.
One, two, three. Oh, I got scissors. You got paper. Scissors shreds paper.
Okay, you can start. It's okay. I started last year, so it's okay.
That's fine. So I already have...
Still going to win.
Yeah, okay. All right, I already have my first pick lined up because I've been negotiating for a long time.
Okay.
And you won't be surprised to hear it is Arsenal's Bukayo Saka.
Oh, I'm a bit surprised because I thought you were going to go with my first pick, who is Kvaradona, of course.
Oh, I could have traded him for you.
Kvaratskhelia is my first pick. And my second pick is Rodrigo from Real Madrid. Here you go.
Rodrigo, eh?
Yeah.
Okay. So three picks in, we've got Saka, Kvaratskhelia, and Rodrigo. At number four and five, I'm going to stay in London, okay. I think. I'm going to pick Enzo Fernandez. Not my favorite, but at four I'll take him.
Fair enough.
I'll take him. And I am so tempted to pick Moises Caicedo to have just a total badass midfield. But I feel like I need some help at the back. So I'm going to pick the very tall William Saliba.
Oh, no. I wanted Saliba, man. Okay. So I'm going for Caicedo, of course, as my third pick and the number six in our draft. And number seven will be Julian Timber.
Ooh, stiffening up the defense there.
Yes.
All right. Now we're getting down here a little bit at 8 and 9. I still see some talent out there. I'm going to pick... All right. So I need a guy to score the goals. And I think I need another winger as well. So I am going to go and play it safe, I think, with Gonzalo Ramos as my center forward.
Good pick.
Not many center forwards in this draft, I might add. And I will go for... Ooh. Do I go with Gabriel Martinelli or Mykhailo Mudryk? Based on recent form, I think I know who I'd go for. But I'm going to go with Gabriel Martinelli simply because I like his initials. Look, three Arsenal players picked in the top nine picks in the Gab and Jules draft.
That is very impressive indeed. And my last pick then, and the number 10 in our draft, will be...
Oh, you're going to go for Anthony Gordon, aren't you?
You know what?
Yeah, it's Anthony Gordon, isn't it?
I had Mudryk in mind, but I think I'm going to go
Anthony
for...
Gordon. Anthony Gordon. Say it. Say it. Say it. Say Anthony Gordon.
For Kefren Thuram.
All right.
Oh, my boy. My boy Thuram.
All right. So recapping our top 10. At one, I take Bukayo Saka. At two, Jules takes Kvaratskhelia. At three, Jules takes Rodrigo. At four and five, I take Enzo Fernandez and William Saliba. At six and seven, Jules takes Moises Caicedo and Yurian Timber. At eight and nine, I take Gonzalo Ramos and Gabriel Martinelli. And at 10, Jules takes Kefren Thuram. Now, Jules, one thing that immediately stands out for me.
Yeah.
And this, we'll see, get a sense of this is a deep draft. But I think last year's draft, substantially more talented.
I agree with you.
These are some of the guys we picked last year. Erling Braut Haaland.
Yeah.
Vinicius Jr.
Yeah.
Aurelien Tchouaméni.
Yeah.
Phil Foden.
Yeah.
Alphonso Davies. Jonathan David. Jadon Sancho. Sandro Tonali. Julian Alvarez. Sven Botman. Yeah, that
was a good
that's
class.
That's a proper draft. All right, Joel, so looking at our top 10 from last year,
we've
concluded that they're better than this year. If we had to do this again with the order, who's trending up, who's trending down, we would presumably still have Haaland at one.
Yeah.
I'm assuming Vinicius we would have ahead of Foden, yeah?
Yeah, I agree. I think so too.
Alphonso Davies we had in four. Is he trending down? Does that still seem right?
I think the injury is a little bit. I mean, the fitness problems that he's had and an average season last year, I think it's fair to say. Maybe the World Cup in between and the disappointment of not doing maybe a bit better with Canada.
I think, you know, the interesting thing is when I look at this list, because you could say the similar thing for Tchouaméni as well.
Totally.
Vlahovic, definitely, last season. Anthony
same.
Also, and again, maybe he was a victim of his transfer fee, whatever.
Maybe, but still.
And obviously, the number 9 and 10, we have Botman and Tonali, who
had really good seasons.
Botman more than Tonali.
Yeah, but
I think both are good seasons, right? I think this also speaks to the fact that at this age, these guys are really, really inconsistent. And there's a lot of things that can go wrong for you.
Yeah, but I think at that age, so like let's say 22, 23 years old, if you're consistent, you're already amongst the best in the world, like Vinicius and Haaland. And if you're not yet, because your maturity is a bit later or some, you know, whatever, like a Foden, for example, or the environment around you, Foden is not world-class, right? He's got a world-class talent and he's got world-class potential, but right now, he's not world-class. He would not be in the Ballon d'Or list, for example, to take an event that could be a bit similar to what we're talking now. The other, like Haaland, Vinicius would be in that. And I think Tchouaméni is a bit the same. And down that list, a lot of them have world-class potential. Not many of them are world-class right now.
Looking at this list from last year's class, is there... All right, give me two guys who you think are... No, if I say two guys you could think are dead certs to be... At the top, again, next year, you're going to say Haaland and Vinicius, and we're all going to agree, right?
Yeah.
So you need two guys most likely to drop out of a hypothetical top 10 list, knowing what we know now. Two guys who you think are most in danger.
So I wonder if Alphonso Davies has maybe reached
his ceiling.
Yeah, in the sense that I'm watching him play. I don't know how much more he can improve tactically, you know, and I think the pace... And the technical ability will take him to a certain point. I just don't know. I think there's more from Foden to come. There's more from Tchouaméni to come. I'm not sure how much more from Alphonso Davies. I would love him to, of course, even get to the next level. I think if Vlahovic plays in a team that actually plays football, that would help him massively. I still believe in him. Anthony is the other one. I'm a bit skeptical. I have to be honest, Manchester United fans. I've got a few question marks over what Anthony's future and the progression and where he can get to.
I would agree with you when it comes to Anthony. I think also because the situation that he's in, he's already very young at Manchester United. He either becomes a starter and a major contributor at Manchester United, but he can only have so many seasons in which he's kind of growing, right? In which he's starting but not really being a difference maker, because those two wide positions, and Erik ten Hag's 4-3-3, are crucially important. Yeah. You can't have any passengers. So I think he's just going to be under a lot of pressure there. And I think just even in terms of technical ability, all-rounder, right? A guy like Vlahovic, you're always going to bet on because of the athletic ability and the mm-hmm. technical ability, even when he has a stinker of a season like he had this year. A guy like Antony, another winger can come along. I mean, yeah. there's a lot of wingers Definitely. Out there, as we're seeing from this year's list. All right. Now, last year we only drafted 10.
Yeah.
You ready to go?
We go bigger this year.
We're going to go big. We're going to go 11 to 20. You have pick number 11. You picked Kefren Thuram.
Number 10. Yeah.
So who's your man at number 11?
Number 11... I've decided to go for Benoit Badiachil from Chelsea.
Oh, going picking another defender.
Yeah. You know, him and Timber, perfect.
All right. Whatever floats your boat there, Jules. All right. In my case, I'm going to go with, I'm going to make it easy, and also pick a Chelsea guy. I'm going to go with Mykhailo Mudryk. And the thinking is, I'm doing it based on potential. I'm doing it based on the fact that he's a project, right?
I agree.
We were all so excited for him.
He had
six bad months. You know, there's a war going on in this dude's country. He's in a new world. He's doing stupid things on social media. He's still young.
I'm with you. I would have picked him next, to be fair.
So. I will have a gamble on him. And then I'm also going to go, I'm going to go with Manuel Ugarte for my other one, Sporting Lisbon. He gets a ton of hype.
PSG, you mean? No.
And now, obviously one of your boys, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm surprised you snubbed Fagioli, and I will tell him. I will tell him how you disrespected his name.
Nicky Beans,
how you disrespected his name. I still leave it. I will leave him for you to pick. I will go as my next pick So this one is Manu Koné. Pretty straightforward. I think he's an amazing talent. Great kids, Paris born and bred, of course, which helps massively. Like a lot of my boys, actually, for the French ones, or the French in this list. And the next one, who is one of my chouchous, you know, one of my favorites, I would go for Santi Jimenez.
Ooh.
I'm a big fan.
Give us your thinking on Santi Jimenez.
I just like, he's a big guy. I like the goals that big strikers score, like he does. And I think he's got that. I like the hunger that he showed. I like how quickly he adapted to European football, coming over to Feyenoord. But I think he's got really good feet. I think he's got a good understanding of the game. And obviously, he's a no one, so he's still very young. There's a lot of room for improvement. Stay another year, maybe two maximum in the Eredivisie, and then a bigger club will come. But I think he's got everything, the mentality, the physique, the technique. Okay, he's not as quick as Vinicius, but I don't think he needs that so much. So I've got really high hopes for Santi Jimenez.
All right, with my next pick, I'm also going to opt for a big striker, albeit a guy who's coming off injury. And this is one of those picks, and you can say that I'm a bit romantic about it. It's one of those picks where people who've been injured get picked based on what on the glimpses they show
before.
I see
where you're going.
You know where I'm going with this one. Yeah. Step right up, the big man, Armando Broja. I know not everybody appreciates him, but I certainly do. He is my pick at number 16. And at 17, I'm going to pick our first goalkeeper.
Okay.
And it's going to be Trubin because he's a bit special. He's been, a starter for, 3-4 years now?
Yeah.
I mean, absolutely remarkable. And, you know, the guy that you can imagine being there for a long, long time.
Yeah. So my last two picks now. Before you go last, Gabby, on the 20th, I will go for Mikel Olise. I think, again, the step up from the Championship to the Premier League has been great with Crystal Palace. And I think, really, there's no limit to him. I can't wait to see him in the under-21 Euros with France. And by the way, a lot of those kids will be playing in the Euros that started yesterday on Wednesday. So I don't think you can watch on UK TV, however, somehow, or certainly maybe just the England games. But yeah, I was flabbergasted that I could not find it yesterday, or maybe I didn't look properly. But for me, Olise has a really great future ahead of him. And
19 is Anthony Gordon, right?
Sorry, Anthony. Maybe another time. It's just didn't really work out for you, the move to Newcastle. You didn't play much the second half of the season. So there's no Anthony Gordon in my team. There's none. However, there is one of his former teammates, because I'm a big fan of Amadou Onana. And Onana is my last pick. I think he's a wonderful talent. Again, has everything to become a top, top midfielder. So Onana is...
Use the word 90. Talent a lot for people who I would say are mostly...
What?
Mostly blue-collar guys.
Nah, come on, come on. Onana is the talented...
He's not blue-collar.
Onana is a talented guy. He's played at the World Cup. Like, what's blue-collar?
What, blue-collar means more of the hard-working, run-around midfielder, rather than...
Who's blue-collar in there? What, Onana?
Who's more talented?
Kone? Kefren Thuram? Kefren Thuram is a wonderful all-around player.
Who's more technically gifted, Onana or Charles de Ketelaere?
Are you going to go for CDK?
I am tempted just to be vindicated, but no, I am going to go make an emotional choice, and I will pick my first Italian on the list.
The only one, I think.
Well, Martinelli was eligible to play.
Come on, please. Take the only one.
And so I am going to go for Nicky Beans, Nicolò Fagioli. Like, it's not just the quality. We've had people playing, you know, who play pass the ball around at a pretty midfield. But the guy has an edge. Not like Gavi has an edge, but he has a different sort of edge. And, I am excited for Nicky
That's
Beans
good.
To see what he can do next year. And I'm excited that Juventus are realizing, hey, look, some of these kids that we spend a ton of money attract and develop, maybe we should get them into the starting lineup. Shout out to those we didn't pick, just quickly from my list. Jacob Ramsey was close.
Yeah.
Fuller and Flo Balogun, no love for him.
Yeah, it was close.
Nico Jackson, despite his 12 goals for Villarreal last season. Charles de Ketelaere, sorry, bud. And Myron Boadu.
Yeah,
a few years
ago,
Byron Moado might have been
not anymore.
Top 10. He's been sliding a little bit.
Ignacio as well from Sporting. We had Malik Cho from Milan, of course. That could have
maybe
been.
Maybe we're just influenced by that awful performance last night.
Thiago Almada, just to say hello to all the MLS listeners. He was in my list somewhere, Almada, too. Kubo was on my list if we're going to be
Fusa Kubo.
Yeah.
Billy Gilmore?
No,
sorry.
Not this
time. All right, that brings us to an end. Share your thoughts. We can find out who's right, who's wrong, and maybe in 12 months we'll do this again. Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit $1 million stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify is your no excuses business partner. Sell without needing to code or design. Just bring your best ideas and Shopify will help you open up shop. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/gabjules, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/gabjules now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/gabjules. All right, enough draft silliness. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gab.
Now, this was a bit of a bolt from the blue. Milan Sandro Tonali on his way to Newcastle United.
Wow, I have to say I didn't see this one coming. Gabby Otto, incredible deal. I think for Milan, 80 million for Sandro Tonali. Okay, I think he's a wonderful player. I think he had a good season, maybe even a very good season, individually certainly, but that's a lot of money. It's a lot of money. It's good for Milan because, as I will ask you next, they can reinvest that amount. And I think Newcastle are getting a really good player. I thought Bruno Guimaraes had that position under control, but maybe they want Tonali and Bruno together on the pitch and maybe change a little bit the way they're playing. Great, let's see. I can't wait to see how Tonali adapts to the Premier League, how the team plays around him. It's a very talented kid.
I think, sure, given his age, he's the captain of Italy's under 21 team that are playing in France in a couple hours.
Exactly.
I think it's a fair fee. It's 80 million, including
you
bonus.
Think it's a fair fee?
That's Milan's asking price. I think Newcastle offering a little bit less. It's hard to tell
it's
in this
a lot
market.
Of money for a midfielder.
For a midfielder that could last you the next 10 years?
No, maybe. You know, maybe. I'm just saying. Like,
it's, you know, I think if you're Milan, you have to take it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, 100%, 100%. And Gab, how are indeed Milan going to spend the Tonali money?
So everything's pointing towards Davide Frattesi, the midfielder from Italian International, already to fill in. I think he's a different player from Tonali. But I think in some ways he can be a good fit, because if Bennacer is going to be kind of your deep-lying playmaker, Frattesi can make the runs and mop up around him. But they're not done there. They also... they've been strongly linked with Marcus Thuram as well, who, of course, is a free agent.
Yeah.
And then there was this suggestion, since they've been doing a lot of talking with Chelsea, because they've been linked with Pulisic and whatever else, that, hey, what if we get Lukaku?
That's what, like, Gazzetta,
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen. I think if you're Lukaku, like, you've got a relationship with
Inter fans. Yeah, you'll be loyal to Inter fans.
Like, I don't see that happening. Also, I don't know they'd want to spend all that money, because you still have to spend if you take Lukaku, because you have to pay his wages and the loan fee. Ilkay Gundogan to Barcelona is expected to be done today. Jules, 2 years plus an option for another. Is this a good deal? Assuming, of course, that they can actually register him.
Yeah, they can.
And from the City end, is Kovacic for 25 million a good replacement?
I like both deals. I think for Gundogan, he's always dreamt to play for Barcelona. I think Xavi was a bit of a hero, a model of his a few years ago. So it makes sense. And he wanted to see something different after Germany and England and winning everything with City this season. I'm all for it. He's 32 years old. This is potentially a three-year deal, the 2 years plus one. It's the kind of deals that you don't like at all. Maybe even less, I guess, if you've got financial problems like Barcelona have still right now. So let's see. And it's not like if they had no midfielders whatsoever.
Yeah, let's see if they can register him. I think it's a good point about the midfield, because whereas with Kovacic, he just slots into that Gundogan.
That's a
different sort of player.
It's a great deal.
But makes sense. Here, I wonder, because you assume that De Jong, poor De Jong's got to start, right?
Yeah, surely.
And you assume Pedri's a nailed-on starter as well. Does it then mean that Gavi plays in that weird hybrid position, and then the third guy is...
maybe they still want a proper number six, like a proper holding midfielder
but
to replace Busquets.
You need a holding midfielder, that's what I'm going to say there. Maybe it'll be your buddy Eric Garcia.
Oh, hey. Speaking of Barca and City, João Cancelo is almost certainly gone too, after falling out with Pep Guardiola, of course. But is there some tension a bit between Xavi and Pep over João Cancelo?
This is a weird one. So obviously João Cancelo had a difficult 6 months at Bayern.
Yeah.
He's back. We assume City are going to move him on. There should be a market for him also, because I assume City are going to contribute to his wages. And I think he's a phenomenal footballer, but it's just me at this stage. But Xavi came out and said, oh, City wouldn't let João Cancelo join us in January. And Pep came out and addressed this on Monday and said, oh, I think, I don't want to say Xavi's been lied to, but he's clearly misinformed. We didn't care where he went as long as he didn't sign for Manchester United.
So someone is lying.
Well, or is misinformed.
Oh, misinformed.
I wonder if maybe the thing was, I'm not sure, could Barcelona have worked out a deal to sign João Cancelo in January, given the financial restrictions that they had, even on loan?
Yeah.
The Kai Havertz to Arsenal deal is imminent, Jules. So attention shifts in midfield, where Thomas Partey and Granit Xhaka are on their way out.
Yeah.
And the targets are Declan Rice and Moises Caicedo. I think those are upgrades.
They are.
But they're both really expensive.
Yeah, as well.
So what do you make of Romeo Lavia as an alternative at 50 million?
I think it's a really good alternative.
For
of
50
course.
Million. Wait, I mean, Donali's too expensive.
It's
at
80 million.
But Romeo Lavia at 50 million. Oh, well, this is fantastic.
I'm not saying that 50 million is the right price for him. I'm saying that he's a good alternative, if you would let me finish.
Okay.
The price tag, I think, because you buy from another English club, it's a premium, like you do with Rice, like you do with Havertz, when you buy from English clubs to English clubs. I think there's always that to take in consideration. I like Romeo Lavia a lot. I liked him when he was younger. He was obviously this huge kind of prodigy. And I think the season that he's had, like bar the injuries, at Southampton in a difficult team, I think showed the talent that he has. So if he can get Rice or Caicedo, one of the two, plus Lavia, this is a really good reinforcement in midfield if Partey and Xhaka goes. And I think Havertz, the idea is also to play him as an eight on the left of that midfield three. So Havertz on one side, Odegaard on the other, and then your defensive midfielder, Rice, for example, or Caicedo, or even Lavia. So
this is the idea, like moving Havertz back into midfield.
Yeah. Like an attacking midfielder on that like sort of left half space. Yeah.
All right.
It's part of the, I don't think he would play every game there, but I think this is part of the appeal for Arteta to sign Havertz.
He is the best on earth, after all.
And Arteta thinks that Havertz has so much talent that he can play in a lot of different positions very efficiently. So I'm happy to see it.
I'm right in saying that City still have a buyback option on Romeo Lavia at 40 million.
Yeah, that's right.
If I were City, I'd take him for 40 million and build the heir to Rodri. But hey, that's just me.
Maybe. Rafael Guerrero, midwine, is in Munich right now on the verge of joining Bayern as a free agent. You're a big fan of him and of the deal.
I am, because he's a free agent. He knows the league. You weaken an opponent.
Yeah.
He showed that he can play in midfield a little bit. I don't know if he's going to use him in midfield or at fullback.
He knows Tuchel very well, obviously.
Tuchel well. He's worked with him before. Hopefully this knocks the Kyle Walker to Bayern deal that you love so much.
I don't think so. He's still coming.
He's
still coming.
I don't know what he's going to do with all these defenders. I mean, Guerrero, he can play midfield, but then you've got a lot of midfielders there all of a sudden, right?
Yeah, Lima, Goretzka, Kimmich.
And the Gravenberch, who's complaining that he wants to play more.
Gravenberch is going to go, I think.
I would hope so. Mason Mount to Manchester United moves a step closer, Jules. The Athletic reporting that United have upped their offer to 50 million, including bonuses, and Chelsea dropped theirs to 65 million, including bonuses. So, meet in the middle, 57.5 million, including bonuses?
Something like that, I think, Gabby. It would get there. There's 100% agreement already between Mount and Manchester United, which is not a surprise. And then you just need to find a way of getting an agreement with Chelsea, who need money, we said, but the money is coming in with the Havertz deal, with maybe the deals with Saudi Arabia clubs. And I have to say, Chelsea are selling better than I thought they would. So I think the Mount deal will go through, probably around, the 55, 57, and I think everybody would be happy with that.
It's amazing when you hire actual specialists in recruitment and selling, that what they can do.
You know. Jose Mourinho has been banned for 4 games by UEFA for calling referee Anthony Taylor an effing disgrace after the Europa League final. That they lost a few weeks ago, I was going to say. Sound fair to you, the 4-match ban? Is it not enough? Is it too much?
So first of all, if I'm Mourinho to you, we drew the final. Then we didn't win the trophy because it was on penalties, but we drew the final, right? Okay. That's what Mourinho would say. I'm surprised it's not more, to be honest. He's got precedent. You can't go and do that. You can't do that. And he knew he was on camera. So for me, it's pretty open and shut. Belgium beat Estonia 3-0 in their Euro 2024 qualifier. But Jules, the big news is Thibaut Courtois.
I mean, Gab, I think this is an incredible story. I think it's a story that has been underreported, really, because not Kevin De Bruyne for this international break. So Tedesco goes like, listen, no KDB, so Lukaku is going to be the captain for the first game. And then Courtois is going to be the captain for the second game that we have against Estonia. Courtois, not happy at all. Not happy, I don't know if he was not happy that he was not captain for both or that he should have been captain for the first game. I don't know why. Does not even turn up for the second game against Estonia. Don't show up, Gab, when everybody's there. Everybody's at the training ground. It's just, I think they had a day off maybe the day before and just never came back. So you're like, wow, okay. So Tedesco is asked about it, obviously. The story leaks very quickly. Tedesco says this is unacceptable, and I think rightly so. Whether you're a young player, an experienced player, a key player, not a key player, I don't care. You just can't do that.
So I'm going to admit my bias here, even though Tedesco is of Italian descent.
Yeah, of course.
Tedesco actually means German. So those things kind of even out. And I'm a big Thibaut Courtois fan. I want to hear Thibaut Courtois' version of events.
So I tell you. So then Thibaut Courtois said that Tedesco is lying, that basically he had some sort of injury, that Tedesco didn't understand his point. So now he's also accusing his own national team head coach to lie, to be a liar.
What does Tedesco have to gain from lying about Courtois?
Nothing. It's just what was organized was Lukaku captain first, Courtois captain second. Courtois never showed up for that second game against Estonia. I think it's amazing.
Wow, it is remarkable. And I think there's more to come on this.
Yeah, surely. Toni Kroos has signed a 1-year extension at Real Madrid, Gabby, and Dani Ceballos is also expected to sign a longer one for him, of course. We're waiting on Luka Modric. to know what he's going to do. And Nacho, by the way, has also been announced today, but we knew it, that he's also extending his deal. What do you make of all of this?
So I love the Ceballos bit. I think that totally makes sense as long as it's at the right price. It sounds like they decided, all right, Jude Bellingham's here, but we're going to keep the gang together for another season. Except Eden Hazard and Mariano Diaz. We hope. I don't see Mariano coming back. Right?
Surely not.
But it is interesting. I think, look, Florentino knows he needs to rebuild this team, right? Because the players are all getting older. But he's got Carletto another year. Evidently, he's pushed the transition on. I would have transitioned sooner if you had the opportunity. I can understand why it hasn't happened. Once you've done that, might as well go all in. Keep Kroos. Keep Modric if you can at the right price in whatever capacity you can do. But and Nacho as well. Ceballos, for me, a no-brainer. I think he earned another contract.
I agree.
More Euro qualifying. France beat Greece 1-0 in Paris as Kylian Mbappe scores from the spot after having to retake the kick, incidentally.
Yeah.
Jules, this must have been a thriller.
Yeah, it was. But you know also what it was? I mean, Greece were not very good. Gus Poyet, our friend, was the manager. There was not much.
La Radio, Gustavo Poyet.
La Radio. But you know who the referee was?
Who?
It was his last ever game as a referee.
Oh, please say Mateu Lajos, please say Mateu Lajos, please say Mateu
Lajos. Mateu Lajos.
Oh, yes.
He was dreadful. One of the worst performances I've seen from a referee, even from himself, in a very, very, very long time.
Have you checked out?
No penalties given. It was just like, it was, so he gave one. I mean, he had to give because Mavropanos almost like literally chopped Griezmann's head.
This former Arsenal star, Mavropanos?
Yeah. Who had a really good season
signed
in Germany.
Signed by that German guy who wears sandals with socks when he was there with Raul Sanjeji. I'm sorry, Arsenal fans. I don't want to bring back trauma.
No, but all this stuff Mavropanos has done really well. After leaving.
I know, but that guy, what was his name?
Sven Mislintat.
Yes.
I knew you were talking about
it. I bet he had a man bun too, right? He could have had a man bun. He probably had a man bun, right? 40-year-old man with a man bun.
Matu Laos, thank you for everything, or thank you not for everything, but I'm glad that you're gone, and that would not stay as your finest hour at all, that last game. The Christopher Nkunku deal to Chelsea was finally made official, Gab. 60 million. 6.5 million for PSG, by the way, and a contract through 2029.
Well, it's the trademark Chelsea long-term contracts. We knew this was coming. Apparently, they revealed that, Nkunku didn't want it announced until after he played his final game for France on the 19th. I don't understand why.
Yeah, like a lot of players do that.
Well, because it might somehow mess you up.
Your season is over. It was a season with Leipzig and France. It's over now. And now you can go on how he does. No,
whatever. Hey, up to you. Look, I think he's a great player. I think he needs to be used in the right way. Pochettino's going to study him. I'll be curious to see whether he's a second striker, whether he's an attacking midfielder, whether maybe he's a winger. I don't know.
And you play him as a nine, as a false nine, or like a hybrid nine.
He can play on his own up front.
Yeah.
He hasn't done that very much for Leipzig.
He can.
Yeah, I'm sure anybody can.
No, he can.
Like Raheem Sterling could, right?
No, but he can be very efficient, I think, as a nine.
I don't know. I'm so curious to see what Poch does with these players. Not a great international break for Germany after losing to Poland. They lose to Colombia as well.
Yeah.
Jules, these are just friendlies because, of course, they're organizing Euro 2024. Yeah. But in Hansi Flick's last four games, they have one draw and three defeats. And the draw was to Ukraine.
Yeah, and let's not forget the World Cup, of course. What happened there? He's had a shocking time. I have to say, I would change now while it's not too late. Because if you start next season with him, it's difficult then to not take him all the way to the Euros that you organize yourself. Why does he play back three? I would never understand. I watched the two games. The Poland one, they had chances and they could have been different. They lost 1-0. Colombia played, literally had fun with them. They humiliated them. And I just don't understand his tactical choices. I don't understand what he does with the players. I don't understand that back three. There's a lot of things that I really, really don't get. And I just wonder if he's one of those managers. Some are really good national team head coach. This is what they like. You don't have the players every day. Maybe that's not for him. I don't know. But they're so bad right now.
I mean, but he's been the national team head coach even before with Jürgen
Yeah, but Lowe, he was an assistant. He's different.
But the thing is, he's been on the inside. You should know everything about the job. And it's strange. There's so much negativity around it on the back of these results. And I'm generally, somebody always says, all right, the friendlies, who cares, right? Look for individual progress. But yeah, when you see performances like this, and this just seems to foster more and more negativity around the team. So I think it is something that they have to...
But Rudi Völler, who is now the national team like general manager or whatever, he's been there 6 months, he's blaming the players more than Flick. So I'm not really sure where they're going together. Prosecutors in Turin have said that they're not investigating Juventus over the inflated transfer swaps that cost them a 10-point penalty in Serie A. Gab, is that big for them? Is that relief?
No, it doesn't really make a difference, to be honest. And I think this story, a lot of people, again, this is complicated, but I think it's worth mentioning. So the reason Juve were given the 10-point ban from the sporting perspective, on the sporting side, is that they were found to have behaved unethically by setting up all the swaps. So it's not that the swaps or the plusvalenze are illegal per se, but when you do it, with the stated goal of gaining an advantage on paper in the books, then it becomes illegal. It becomes kind of like a conspiracy to do something unethical, right? Now, we can debate whether this was proven or not, and Juve fans will say, no, it wasn't, blah, 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 whatever. But that's what they were found guilty for.
Yeah, exactly.
This is a criminal investigation. This is a criminal investigation, and they're being investigated for a range of things, including false accounting and so on. What they found was we cannot prosecute them on these swaps because there's no fiscal implication to it. There's nothing.
Okay.
That's all it is. So it doesn't, they're two separate things, but people love mixing these things up and going crazy and so on. There's people who flip out when Juve get the 10-point penalty. People then flip out when Juve go and pre-bargain in the other trial. People need to chill out on this, okay? Like, this is a criminal investigation. It's going to take forever. People were angry that, oh, why is this taking so long this season? It's a criminal investigation. That's why you did two different things, sporting justice and criminal justice. The bar for evidence is far higher in criminal justice. I don't know what evidence they have. I personally, my impression is I don't think they're going to get... I think they're going to be fine with this one. I think they'll have a serious problem with the other one, with the false accounting one and the undeclared bonuses. But that probably won't come to fruition for another 2 to 3 years. That's how slow criminal justice moves in Italy. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Gab. Just go to Indeed.com/Gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. N'Golo Kanté is on his way to Saudi Arabia, as we said, but in his farewell message, he talked how his family had to face, quote, rumors and lies, Jules. What's he talking about? He doesn't talk much, but when he does...
This is a really interesting story that, again, was big in France, not so much over here. N'Golo Kanté, the sweetest man on earth, really. But the problem is when you're a footballer and that you're sweet, there's a lot of people around you that are trying to get involved as your agent, maybe, or your PR person or whatever, try to get onto deals, start to talk on your behalf, and then that creates a lot of tensions between sometimes your own family, sometimes maybe the guy who was your first agent, or maybe another agent that you had before, and you can't really control what's around you. And I think with N'Golo, that's exactly what's happening. He grew up in a council estate in Paris, or just in the suburbs of Paris, and I think a lot of people saw him becoming a pro as a way of making some money, and I think there was people around him that were not really nice people. I think there's been a lot of stories, and whether they're completely true or not, but you know, people tell you stories about people threatening or being very menacing, that kind of stuff. Iran and Golo.
Paul Pogba went through it as well, right?
Yeah, Paul Pogba, and similar things, him and his family. So I would think he referred to that, and that maybe going so far away is trying to go as far away as those kind of problems are still going on right now. But to be fair, only N'Golo knows exactly what is happening, what's been happening around him and his family.
It's a tough one, and I think it's interesting you choose.
It's very common.
We all have heard stories anecdotally. Yeah. It's interesting that you would mention it like this, and without an explanation like yours, people are like, oh, what's he talking about? You know, because the problem is, from a media perspective, when you do this, remember, we reported it. There's a lot, you know, there was a moment when it looked like he was going to get a new contract at Chelsea, yeah, and so on, and then it doesn't happen. Well, you don't explain it, people are going to say, oh, is he having a go at Chelsea for maybe promising a contract and not taking it, whatever, or not having, you know. And if this is the reason, it's got nothing to do
exactly
with Chelsea.
I would think, when I read the statement and when I read his message, that's what came to my mind straight away, knowing the story really well. But there might be something else, I don't know. But yeah, for me, I put two and two that way. And then Dzeko will leave Inter on a free transfer this summer and join Fenerbahce in Turkey. Gav? He's 37, yeah?
Turkey's kind of like the Saudi Arabia of Europe. Look, I think he showed last year that he can contribute, not for 90 minutes, but he's a tremendous professional. He's a super, super smart player. Good luck to Fenerbahce. Obviously, you know, they'll want to get back to title-winning games.
Exactly.
After finishing where they third this season,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah.
So hopefully he can contribute there, play good football. He could
and enjoy it, because he needs to enjoy it now. He needs to enjoy the last few years. He doesn't have
much on the wages he was on. There's no Inter we're going to keep him.
Yeah.
Cristiano Ronaldo scored the late winner and won his 200th international cap for Portugal in their 1-0 win over Iceland. Jules?
I thought that was written. I thought it was really nice. I mean, to get to the 200th international game is incredible.
He's only 157, I think, behind Lily.
Yeah, exactly.
And Christine Sinclair.
And Christine Sinclair probably not close. And in terms of goals as well. But he scored again right at the end. He was flagged for offside and VAR had to intervene. And in the end, he celebrated that goal.
It was so sweet. Because first he's saying, like, no, it wasn't offside.
And then
the referee says, calm down, Cristiano. We have VAR. He's like a little kid when he's sitting there waiting.
He scored like 700 goals in his career. And yeah, he still gets that excited when he scored against Iceland away. So, you know, well done to him.
That was sweet, Cristiano.
Yeah,
exactly. Childlike Cristiano.
Yeah. Gareth Bale was asked about what Leo Messi should expect in MLS when he comes over into Miami. And he said, well, they accept losing a bit more in the US than in the rest of the world. There's no consequence. You know, you can't get relegated. Is that fair?
I think it's true. I mean, certainly it's the feedback you get.
Nobody wants to lose, right? Don't give me that line like, oh, it's okay. They're okay if they lose.
I think if you speak to, like, Gareth Bale doesn't talk much, and I've been very critical in the past, but when he does talk, and he's honest about it, he was comparing it, putting it in context. He says, like, you know, Real Madrid, you lose a game, it's the end of the world.
Yeah.
In MLS, you're not going to get relegated. You know, a lot of teams make the playoffs. You're not going to, you know, there are passionate local fan bases, but they're not going to show up outside your house if you're Neymar, right? So in that sense, I think there is less pressure. There's going to be less pressure on the environment. Now, obviously, if you're Lionel Messi, you still put a tremendous amount of pressure on yourself and whatever, that's fine. But it is a different environment. And we've had the feedback from people who've worked in Europe and the US. I think especially, I'm going to get into promotion relegation, but it does impact things. I mean, we've heard a million stories, I mean, from different people about how, from Nadim himself, right?
Yeah.
What happens? Like, oh, look, we're out of the playoffs and there's 10 games to go. Okay. Now what? Like,
yeah, but that happens in the Premier League as well. When you're mid-table, you're safe, and there's five.
I don't think it happens to this degree. I don't think it happens to, at least anecdotally, from what we've heard, especially when it comes to players who, I mean, it might be different for players who are competing to keep their spot on the roster. But if you have a contract, and all of a sudden, you know, difference does it make if you beat Minnesota United so that you can finish, you know, one spot above, one spot below, makes no difference, right? If once you're out of the playoffs, once you're, you know, it's This is the kind of thing that happens.
Again, you can say that in a lot of leagues in Europe as well. Once you're, if you know you're not going to go down and not going to go into Europe, then you finish 12th or 11th. Right.
But Gareth Bale played his entire career for Southampton, avoiding relegation, Tottenham trying to get into top four.
Yeah, true.
And, I mean, Messi's played for Barcelona and Paris Saint-Germain, competing for titles. He's used to that level of pressure. I think that's what he's talking about.
Yeah. Fine.
Barcelona were finally able to register Gavi as a first-team player, which means he'll get to wear the number 6 shirt next season. Jules, no more number 30 for him.
I kind of like it, to be fair, but number 6 is very special. Of course, it was the Xavi's number. It's special at Barcelona. I think for Gavi, the responsibility that he can take over, it's good. That's the number he wanted. That's the number he gets.
Yeah,
it's good.
I get that. This is part of me also says, man, now that we've gone away from the 1 to 11s, and we've done that a while back, if you've got your number, keep your number, right? There's a part of me that says,
but 30
cool?
is like,
I'm going to write the story of number 30, right?
But 30 doesn't make you dream, even if Messi wore it at the beginning.
When you think of number 23, who do you think of?
Yeah, but
when you think of 23, who do you think of?
Michael Jordan.
No, I think of Marco Materazzi, of course, who wore number 23. Michael Jordan wore number 23 in honor of Marco Materazzi.
Okay. Angel Di Maria is going back to where his European adventure started. That's right. After 13 seasons, he's reportedly on his way back to Benfica.
I don't think anybody has been harder on Angel Di Maria than I have last 12 months.
That's true.
I always talk about the romantic stories. Wouldn't it be great? You know, if it's really make it romantic, go back to Rosario. You've made enough money, Angel.
Yeah, sure.
But, you know, we live in the real world. Go back to Benfica. I'm curious to see where he fits in, given the style Benfica played last year, which is rather dynamic.
Yeah, the intensity.
Di Maria is not quite as dynamic. But it's nice. I think Benfica fans, you know, get to appreciate him again. I think he was there for 3 years, something like that, before he went to Real Madrid.
Yeah.
So I like these homecomings. Marseille have a new manager.
Yay!
It will be up to Marcelino, who had been out of work since 2019, which I think is kind of scandalous because he's a really good manager.
I agree.
It's going to be up to Marcelino to fill Igor Tudor's big shoes. I'm assuming Tudor, being big and tall, wears much bigger shoes.
Yes, than Marcelino. I think they will have to swap the sizes. Marcelino, very good friend of Pablo Longoria, of course, the Marseille president. That's where the link is. They worked together before, a long time ago, at Huelva, also at Valencia, of course, where they were good and kind of successful. Let's see. I think there was a lot of people not so sure, like a lot of Marseille fans, not really convinced about him. Maybe the name was not big enough for them. If you compare to Marcelo Gallardo, for example, who was also in the conversation.
Yeah, if you compare it to Igor Tudor, but, with all due respect.
Yeah, no, but a lot of fans would have kept Tudor at the club. Right. And I think it's a big blow again that he left after just 1 year. So we'll see. But the pressure on Marcelino would be huge, not just because he's the guy of the president, and he's also there because he's the president's friend, one of his best friends. So he'll have to hit the ground running very, very quickly, though, to be fair. Tottenham need not one, but two goalkeepers while they wait on David Raya. They're very close to signing Empoli's Guglielmo Vicario.
Yeah, deal reportedly around 20 million. I think they're just waiting to rubber stamp it. It's an interesting deal for me because Vicario, I thought, was exceptional last season in Serie A. Now, playing for Empoli, completely different because you're playing for a very small team.
Yeah.
Small team that likes to attack, so you face a bazillion shots. I thought he was really, really good. Is he ready to be a number one at a team like Tottenham? Probably not, which may be why they're still pursuing David Raya. I do wonder, are they going to get the two of them, is Ange's idea to get the two of them to compete against each other for a starting spot? You know, what's right for Vicario? It's always, when you make the transition to smaller team, to bigger team, and you're still young, there's always that question, all right, I'm going to have to accept to be number two for a while, right?
Yeah.
And then how long, is there a pathway for me to be number one? I don't know. And by the way, on David Raya, Brentford, from what I am led to believe, hanging in there, they want
the
Spurs to
million.
Cough up every last penny.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This was way back on Monday, but Bournemouth sacked Gary O'Neill. Andoni Iraola will be replacing him. Just, I thought this is a bit odd, and there must be a backstory to it, which I don't know, because O'Neill did really, really well with very limited resources.
He kept them up. They spent a lot of money in January for him to keep the team up. You know, Ouattara, Zabani. There was a lot of new signings in January. And I think despite staying up, it's not because you keep a team up that you're the right man.
Bournemouth don't belong in the Premier League based on
size. It doesn't matter so much. I don't think they believe that it could take them forward. I think Sonny Iraola, he had some really good season at Rayo Vallecano, took that team really well forward, the style of football, the personality that he is. He speaks English very well. He was very heavily linked with the Leeds job after they signed Javi Gracia, or even before that. Didn't happen. There was a release clause to pay for him to get out of Spain. I have to say I like this deal massively.
Yeah, look, I think is a very good manager, and he's ready for the step up. I am surprised, but then I guess, Foley just had a success in the NHL, and maybe wants to replicate. Yeah, I don't know where Bournemouth can go because they play in a shoebox.
No, okay, but Iraola is a better manager than Gary O'Neill, right? He's got more experience. He's a better manager than
Gary. I will give you that. Right. I will give you
And
that.
By the way, it's another Basque manager like Lopetegui, Arteta, Emery, now Iraola as well in the Premier League. It's incredible. 4 of 20 from that tiny, tiny region.
Our Basques.
You see? Deco announced that he would be shutting down operations at his D20 players agency, which represents, amongst others, Fabinho, Tapsoba, Rafinha. So he's not an agent anymore because
everybody assumes he's going to become Barcelona's next sporting director. And so obviously that would be a conflict of interest. Now, what Deco doesn't explain is what happens to these people. What happens to his orphans? You go on his website, there's like 80 players there. So are these guys just left out on the street?
I'm sure.
I think it becomes very difficult to cut ties. You assume, again, I don't know this. I don't want to be shaking around legally, but I don't think they just said, like, all right, we're turning off all the lights. All these people who work here, all the lawyers, all my assistants, you guys, all go
home. You're free.
Rafinha, go sign with somebody else. There is going to be some recirculation. Yeah. And it's not necessarily going to, the relationships aren't going to go away. He just won't be profiting from him. And that's a necessary step, because if you work for a club, you can't also be an agent.
Yeah.
Well, unless you're Portuguese. Yeah. Sorry. Patrick Vieira is now being linked to the Leeds job along with Scott Parker. Scott Parker's cardigan with the funny letter on it. And Daniel Farke. Woof, woof. It's a good place to start over.
I think it's a great club. I think it would be really good for them. Obviously, trying to bring them back up, which is not going to be easy. We know the Championship is a very difficult league. We're not going to go over that. He was keen on the US men national team job, of course. Didn't get it. Triple G retained it in a way, or regained it even. But I think it would be good for Leeds. I think it would be really good for Leeds. He's got good experience now. He's ready for it. I haven't spoken to him yet, so I don't know if he's keen or not. I should have, maybe.
Okay. I'm being unkind on Daniel Farke just because...
Come on.
He doesn't look like a manager, but he is a manager. And he has... his last job didn't work out, but he's a track record. He's taken teams up into the Premier League and whatever else, right? So is Scott Parker, I guess. He's won promotions too.
Come on.
But I just don't understand. How do you get a short list of where these three guys are the three people you're interviewing? How does that...
I don't know.
I really wonder about the process.
Yeah. No, I agree. I agree completely. I thought the same. Juventus have complaining the permanent signing of Arek Milik for I think it's 6.3 million euros and 1.1 million euros in bonuses, I was told yesterday. This was always going to happen, right? He was on loan there from Marseille.
Yeah, he was on loan and a shoestring. He can do a job for you. If he plays regularly, he'll get double figures in Serie A, which is what Juve need to do. They need to find money somewhere. It's a bit of an insurance policy in case Vlahovic, I think they would. They're very open to doing price. Yeah.
You keep Mosey Kane and Milik and you let go Vlahovic and you make money on Vlahovic.
Which isn't great, but Milik does a job. Milik puts in a shift. I don't think he's a bad player to have if the price is right. And this price is right. Xavi Simons is rumored to be on his way back to Paris Saint-Germain from PSV Eindhoven. Jules, Paris Saint-Germain, they put in a 6 million euro buyback clause.
That's right.
When they sold them. So this should be straightforward, unless...
And but you have to convince him to
he
want
doesn't
to come want back.
To come.
But I mean, he, it's not that. His point is like, we don't even know who the manager is. So he can't make a decision.
It's Luis Enrique.
Oh yeah, but it's not confirmed. He hasn't. Luis Enrique hasn't spoken to any of the players yet. So I think it makes a lot of sense for Xavi Simons to wait until he knows who the manager is, can speak to the manager. If Luis Enrique said, "I don't want you back," he's not going to come back, right? Or you bring him back to then sell him on for more money than they did. You know, he left on a free to PSV Eindhoven anyway. So I think that's right for him to wait and see if Luis Enrique said, listen, I really want you here. This is how I'm going to play you. So then yeah, but not now. Not now doesn't make any sense for him to make a decision.
But is this buyback deal? If he just doesn't want to go back because he doesn't trust it, like maybe Neymar stays or whatever, and there's no...
If he doesn't want to, he won't go back. He can decide. They can't just bring him back, like force him to come back. But I think he's right to wait for to know who the manager is and speak to him before making any decision.
Xavi, it's Luis Enrique.
Yeah, but he still hasn't spoken to him. You can tell him like he's, you know...
Right. Xavi, message me. I'll pass you Enrique's number.
Chelsea continue to be linked with the Villarreal striker Nicolas Jackson, who has a 35 million release clause. Gabby is 22 and scored 12 La Liga goals last season. Is it what they need up front? And by the way, he was that close to signing for Bournemouth in January, and he failed his medical. That's why he didn't go.
Yeah, that's right. I guess they look at this and they look at accumulating assets, right? 22... on a team that finished, what, fifth last year, yep. Villarreal, 12 Liga goals, not a bad return.
That's
at that age.
Yeah.
He played a lot through the middle, but he can also play wide because obviously Chelsea don't have enough wingers. I mean, maybe would he be a good partner for Nkunku in the front too? Maybe that's what they're thinking. I don't know. I think it's interesting. They're looking at this as a value signing, it feels. Because if there was no release clause, how much would you spend on Nicolas Jackson?
Yeah, I do think that the release clause is really decent. It's really decent. For a player of his age and that ability, you would sell, we talked about Romeo Lavia earlier, 50 million. It could easily be a 10 million more than that, I think.
Maybe because he's a forward. I don't know. It does not excite me.
No?
Put it that way. No.
Okay.
Speaking of excitement, you and I are more excited than most for the under-21 Euros that kicked off Wednesday. Jules, what's it out for you?
You know what? I think if you look at all the squads, all the teams that are involved in this tournament this year, and it's an under-21, but don't shout at the television when you see a lot of them who are already 23 years old, because the age was at the start of the qualifiers 2 years ago. So obviously now those players are still allowed to play in the final tournament, although they're 23 and not 21 anymore. You get me? However, I think the players are incredible. From if you looked yesterday at the Belgian Netherlands game, for example, which was an outstanding game, although it finished 0-0, they missed a lot. Everybody missed a lot of chances. But from De Ketelaere to Openda to Gravenberch to one of the Timber brothers,
how good was De Ketelaere?
Ah, yeah.
How good was Charles De Ketelaere?
Per Verbruggen in goal was outstanding. So all of them, and then France, Italy. We mentioned Tonali before. France have an incredibly talented squad. And again, England have a wonderful squad too. Spain, we saw yesterday, a lot of those players like Alex Baena, for example, are already playing in La Liga week in and week out. So it's an incredibly high playing field. Is that what you say?
Like high standards.
It's the high standards. All of that. So do watch it. I don't know if you can watch it in England, but you can watch it in a lot of countries. You can find a way of finding the games. But the Italy-France from tonight, Thursday night, is really, really interesting on paper. So, yeah. It's good. Sadio Mane scored twice as Senegal beat Brazil 4-2. Yeah, that's right. It was only a friendly, but still, big win for Senegal. Gab, reason for Seleção fans to be concerned?
No, not at all.
It's not good to lose.
It's summer. It's not good to lose. You did the other game against Guinea. You wore the black shirts. You made your point. You were in. They played this game in Lisbon.
Yeah.
You know, signed some autographs, now roll on the summer. Honestly, these friends, people complaining about the Nations League, but there's something at stake in the Nations League. This is as exciting as the Argentina Indonesia game, you know, or the. This is what it is. And I think Brazil will be just fine, and they will have their new manager, and it may or may not be an Italian guy. Arsenal have suspended sales of their 2023-24 official kit. Which commemorates the Invincibles. Jules, it seems like their supplier should I name them? I think it's a big brand that rhymes with Badidas. kind of screwed things up.
Yeah. More than that, Gab. So as you said, it's to celebrate the Invincibles. This is 20 years of the season 03-04, obviously, when they won the league without a single defeat in it. So it's a lovely idea. You bring a shirt back and you've got on the shirt some tribute to that season 20 years ago. Some, you know, like things like that, except that a season, as you know, in the Premier League lasts 38 games, right?
Usually, yes.
Not less than that. Not 36 or 34 or 32. So they would have to redo the shirt.
So what, they had a list of the results and they had missing?
Yeah, I think it was the famous, you know, so 12 draws and the 26 wins and the zero defeat, obviously, or something like that. But I think he stopped short at 34.
And fans actually apparently picked this up.
Yeah, you picked this up. So, you know.
I'd be angry too if I were Arsenal.
Yeah, I agree. A friendly between Qatar and New Zealand was abandoned at halftime the other day, Gab, over claims of racial abuse.
Yeah, so this wasn't racial abuse from the stands. This was
between players.
New Zealand's Michael Boxall complained just before halftime to the referee and to teammates that he had been racially abused. When the referee didn't take action, the players just walked off. New Zealand said, well, we're not going to continue because you're not taking action. Mm. The guy he accused of accusing him, the Qatari player named Yusuf Abdurrissaq, he issued his own statement. He denied it, that he'd racially abused him. He said, in fact, it was Michael Boxall who racially abused him. And, like, we have no idea what happened. But I think when it comes to racist abuse between players or alleged racist abuse, and by the way, you can Google these guys and get a sense for yourself what might have been going on here. If the referee doesn't hear it, I think there's almost nothing you can do.
Yeah, right? It's word against word, I guess.
It is a pure word against word. If teammates on both sides don't come out and say it, and don't come out and testify in a credible way, I don't know how you resolve this. Mm. It's certainly, I think, a very, very ugly situation.
Yeah.
Jules, that brings us to an end.
Oh, man.
I am going on holiday.
You are.
But you're
going
to be back on Monday with Nate Manua.
Right.
How about that?
Yeah.
Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate is to not search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.